Star Trek 57, M23, take two.
Star Trek Podcast.
Security detects no threats. We'll do a personnel overhaul. No decks unchecked. All tactical functions are steady. Phaser banks, deflector shields, all at the ready.
Apologies.
If we were on a truly analog system, there'd be an infinite points of readiness and non-readiness.
Okay. I think this is the long way around of saying that we are ready to begin the podcast. Mm-hmm. We are ready, in fact, to
Let's
begin.
Let's not talk about whatever that was.
we are ready to begin the 199th.
Oh, no.
Holy shit.
Episode of the It's Got Star Trek podcast. That's a whole lot of podcasts.
It's making me sweat.
So, it being the 199th episode, this episode, being that, we know that the next episode, logically, is the 200th episode. And because it's the 200th episode, and because human brains are hilarious, we're going to celebrate that number.
Somehow that's a big number.
By having a special little episode. We are going to have listener comments.
What?
Listener audio comments. You can send in your own audio comment at itsgotstartrek.com /record. You can send it in up until, I think, Wednesday, August 10th, maybe. I think if you send it by us, then maybe we'll get it. If you're listening in the future, you can still send it in. It's not going to be played on the 200th episode, though.
It'll be played whenever.
But we will have audience comments, audio submissions from y'all. We will have emails. We will have highlights and some other surprises.
Like
and
highlights from podcasts?
Yeah, from our podcast.
No, from the magazine highlights.
Man.
We will do
highlights from that magazine
highlights. We will do speed competitions on that find the differences between the two images game. Yeah. Between all three of us, we'll do a tournament style, knockout tournament style. Yeah. Highlights magazine.
Lame.
I didn't hate Highlights magazine. I was more of a Ranger Rick guy myself growing up.
Ranger Rick is probably better, yeah. I don't think I ever actually read a highlights. I just looked at it. It was a bunch of stuff, and I was like, I don't know what any of this
like
stuff
in the,
is.
Like at the dentist or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
These are things that people don't know about anymore.
Some people do.
I think they still have that at the dentist.
Yeah. So people who are of a similar age and geographic upbringing will understand the joke, and they'll think, oh, that's great. That's nostalgia. Yeah. And younger folks would be like, whoa, those guys are so cool. They lived in such a cool...
so old.
They lived in a cool era where they had Slurpees for like 50 cents and Highlights magazine and Ranger Rick.
Mm-hmm. When it rains.
We're looking forward to that episode. It's going to be fun. That's just going to be a little fun celebratory episode. And then you will get the extra. You'll get episode 201 will be our discussion of the big finale.
Hegemony.
Some people say, we should save this debate for next week. Some people say hegemony. Some people say hegemony.
I don't know if anyone really says hegemony,
some
though.
Some people do. I've heard it.
Next week.
Okay.
Defer to next week.
Okay.
That's when we
fight,
discuss it.
It's a fight for a different day.
It's a way to fill time next week.
when we need to fill
time with content. Just stuff the fucking podcast full
that's
of content.
That's a stuffer. Yeah.
All right. That is next week. So, yes, episode 200.
Was that like the explosion at the end?
That was at the beginning, wasn't it?
I think that was at the beginning.
This episode. An episode.
It's pretty jarring the first time you see it.
199 of the It's Got Star Trek podcast. It's the Subspace Rhapsody.
Subspace Rhapsody.
Star Trek. Strange New Worlds.
Subspace Crap.
Season 2.
Oh, shit. Jesse didn't like it.
Episode 9. Subspace Rhapsody. Okay. And here's what we're going to do. Because this is one of them special episodes.
Why was that?
Them special episodes that they've done here. It's going to be historic. Whether you call it classic or not is going to be subjective. So they've provided us with this really simple structure to analyze this episode. So I propose that what we can do is we can give our sort of overall impressions and some key things. Because I think it's good to lay that foundation. And then let's kind of, you know, go through. They've got all the songs listed out. They've conveniently listed out all the songs.
Which on sort fire.
Of form the core of the episode. We can go song by song.
And then
we're just going to conclude, summarize, wrap it all up, and that'll be a podcast. What's the... Okay.
That sounds good to me.
All right. Good. I wasn't sure if
I had a
verbal assent or not.
I thought that was a thumbs up.
Yeah, that's a boom. I did that for episode 200 and this. And then boom.
So let's start with our overall impressions, as well as we can toss in as needed what the internet thinks.
Okay. I thought it took me a minute to like get into the mode of watching it. At first, I was just kind of like, I don't know about this.
Yeah.
But when
it's
I
like, is this how it's going to be the whole episode?
But when I sort of like let myself fall into it, I found that like I could start to enjoy it. I still am wondering to myself. I'm like, I know I don't want to be like, I don't want to get caught up in the whole like, is this Star Trek kind of debate or not? Like, because.
Well, anything is Star Trek.
Yeah, anything is Star Trek. But I was like, I can't help but still feel weird. It's like, that was a weird Star Trek episode. Like, that was the weirdest Star Trek episode. Like, not in terms of plot, but just like...
Well, they went to a planet that had a bunch of Nazis on it.
Well, in terms of what my...
Multiple times.
In terms of what my mind will accept as a Star Trek presentation, that stretched it the most. Now, that's not saying it, I didn't like it. It's just saying, like, it. Even after the fact, I'm like, wow, that really... I got to bend my mind around it to take that all in. But like I did say, the first bit I was like, ugh. But then I started
it's very jarring.
But I did start to sink into it, and some of the songs I was actually jamming a little bit.
So. Well, how about you, Jesse? Were you like not as into this?
Well, I thought it was a good idea in concept. I wasn't really into a lot of the songs, just the sort of the style of the music. I mean, you can do all sorts of different types of music in a musical. I just wasn't into a lot of particular stuff.
It was like a poppier, kind of like modern poppier.
Well, I thought...
Super kind of vanilla sounding. But the first song I thought was pretty good, and the finale was pretty good.
Yeah, the finale was pretty rocking.
And the chapel song was decent.
Yeah, you know what? I agree with that.
Well, you guys are on the same page.
And it took me like the second time through. I was like, wait a minute. This first song is more interesting, and it's more, you know, it sort of sets the
I think it definitely...
You're just like
benefits from multiple viewings.
Everybody's like, what's going on? And the audience is like, what the hell's going on? Like,
yeah, the first
you don't expect Spock to just kind of start singing.
On the second watch, I enjoyed this first song more because like I knew what I was getting into.
Yeah,
more. And then I was like, okay, this isn't actually pretty decent. You know,
I really liked it. I really liked it.
But it's a very fun episode. They're doing all these sort of fun episodes. Strange New World is kind of, you know, they're trying to make Star Trek more fun.
Mm-hmm.
I gather.
Mm-hmm. You sound so enthusiastic about that.
I'm playing it cool, man.
They're making Star Trek so fun.
No, I like it.
I think it's great that they're taking risks.
They're experimenting. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They're taking risks. They're pushing. Mm-hmm.
And it's not going to work for everybody. I think we can see that here. There's differences of opinion.
Definitely a very weird Star Trek experience.
We've had.
But like, I'll say it's really fucking memorable. And I'm glad they went for it. And I did actually find myself. I thought I was going to be honestly. Like, I thought I was going to be bored, and I wasn't bored. I was definitely entertained through the whole thing. So, and when I say that, I went to musicals like crazy as a kid because it's just what my family always did. So, like, I'm a little like overloaded on musicals, like, because I sort of associate it with like you know, watching my brother be in some musical, which is great because he was great in them and everything.
That's right.
And it was fun.
He's a singer.
It was fun, you know, but at the same time, it just brings back sort of memories of like, oh, I got to go do something, you know.
I love musicals unabashedly. So I think I was, of course,
was he
primed,
in the Music Man?
Primed to enjoy this. I do like the Music Man.
I don't
man.
Think so. Maybe he probably was, but I didn't see it.
Was he in...
Seven Brides for Seven Brothers. You're just going to ask him about, was he in Oklahoma? You're just going to ask him about every like Midwestern set 1950s.
He lives in Oklahoma.
1960s musical. I dig musicals just at the baseline. So I think I was primed to enjoy this episode, which I did largely. I thought this was super impressive. Just from the idea was bold, mm-hmm. and I was concerned about whether or not they could pull it off. I do think they pulled it off, not perfectly, not 100%. And it is fundamentally a little bit silly. Mm-hmm. I don't have quite the same issue you did, Dan. Although I totally get where you're coming from, mm-hmm. Just because I think there's a lot of things that are so silly in Star Trek, but because they're like core and old and before we were born.
Wait, my issue meaning like stretching the bounds of Star Trek?
Well, because like I said, on TOS, you had them go to a gangster planet, a planet where they were all Nazis, American Indian planet.
Alice in Wonderland.
Miri was just like a reverse Earth planet for some reason, except with a terrible disease. Like, there's a lot of these things where it's also pretty silly. Now, I get it. Yeah, this is... crew being controlled by like some sort of subspace force. I had going into this, I had thought maybe it was going to be an alien intelligence manipulating them in some puppetry type way.
Right.
Something along those lines, which would mean maybe make more sense than just we all have to dance.
Well, they got some kind of the alien laser, right? There's some kind of alien laser force.
Alien laser.
Isn't that what made him sing?
Well, it was coming out of the subspace, yeah.
Some kind of
whatever.
Subspace
it was
resonance.
The fold.
Yeah, but I got the impression that it was a natural phenomenon. It wasn't something that was being controlled. It was
no.
It was
a quirk
of them.
It was a naturally occurring subspace.
It wasn't caused by aliens, but it was caused by some sort of unknown thing that
quantum
sort of
mechanical
like
probability
non-living
wave business.
Version of aliens. Yes. But it was still being controlled.
It
by
was
something
a sci-fi. Yeah, but it wasn't controlled. Like I do think there's a difference between agency versus non-agency, natural patterns do natural. Like I can, if you want to be really nitpicky about this, and this is where I'm not, if you want to be really nitpicky about it, you can be like, okay, natural patterns are going to somehow result in people choreographing Broadway style music across a number of like there was 1960s Broadway, 1980s, 1990s. They went the whole thing.
I mean, on the other hand, people do sort of blame a lot of their like actions on drugs or some, you know, stuff like that. It's like, oh man, I was drunk or I was high, you know. So like, you know, they could sort of just say, man, I was really high on some patterns or something, you know?
Which would be kind of awesome. Yeah. I mean, you've just made me really intrigued by this idea. I want to slur on some patterns.
They're not doing a lot with subspace at the time, right? The subspace is a new thing for them.
Well, I think they use it for communication, but they haven't like they're not as good at using it as they are in
it
say,
was
TNG later.
It was a little. Confusing. Okay. So yeah, Uhura was running the switch, and because Spock was using like 100% of the ship's power to figure out this improbability field subspace fold quantum stuff.
Always doing that.
So I wasn't sure exactly what. I guess she was routing messages. I understood what she was like a switch operator, basically.
Yeah, right.
But like they got messages from Dr. Corby. He's like far away, isn't he? Like, so wouldn't
right.
that
name
like,
is going to be important.
And so
like admirals and other ships.
Yeah. So she was talking about like how we have to wait like weeks for messages, but like it seemed like things
Dr.
were going
Corby's
in real time.
Dr. Corby's like a Xeno orthodontist.
You only have to wait weeks if it's like from one side of the quadrant to the other, not necessarily to between ships and star bases.
Well, they didn't have much beyond the quadrant.
Well, remember in Enterprise when Hoshi had to like get every, I think it was Hoshi was had to
batch them all into one thing and
send them off. So it definitely wasn't that approach. It was real time.
Yeah.
So they use some kind of networking.
Well, she's
power.
Pretty. You know, she's pretty on the ball. That Uhura.
Well, I mean, that's the future. So I guess they have different technology. But yeah, Uhura was of course on the ball about routing all those stuff. So I don't know. Yeah, I guess she was just. Yeah, it was. I wasn't clear on the distance situation, but as Patrick pointed out, we can just assume, I guess, that they weren't super far away. I don't know.
I mean, but it's sci-fi.
But
it's sci-fi magic.
Right. So they were saying that this full... They were saying it was three times as faster, right?
That's, yeah.
But then, like, at one point, Uhura says, she says... messages that would normally take weeks now can happen instantaneously. And I was that's not three times.
That's the type of thing I really honestly wish I wasn't aggravated by.
Yeah,
because
right.
intellectually, I don't want to be aggravated by that because it's silly, it's petty, it's big deal. Well, but it nevertheless, I'm just like, ugh.
Well, one thing I'm going to be more petty about is when Paley was like, what makes you think this particular fold will lead to faster communication? And Spock was like, frequencies propagate through it three times faster than normal. It's like he's just saying it's faster because it moves at a greater speed. I thought that was like not really a great answer. I don't know.
I think that they had to get through that real quick.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah,
to get to the fun part where everyone starts singing.
Right.
And I'm, I do like that, and we'll get into the songs in a second. But I do like how they utilize the characters throughout this. They did use them all well, especially Spock being somebody who you don't imagine singing. He starts it all off,
yeah,
right? Exactly. And then, of course, he has another big solo later.
Yeah, not so good.
What the fuck?
that's a loud sound effect.
That was weird. I don't know what happened there.
Well, these things happen from time to time.
Yeah, this is what I meant to say. The intermix chamber and containment field. That was the.
Well, so here's one of the things that is risky, and why I really respect them is I think no matter how well they pulled off this episode, and I'm in the boat where they pulled it off fairly highly well.
You're like, in that pulling it off boat.
Yeah, the production was good.
But because it's subjective, there are going to be. Battles and
battle
disagreements. We're all going to disagree here.
Battles.
Subtle bodies.
Throughout the course of our conversation.
That was from Bob's Burgers.
What did you say?
It was like subtle bodies.
Subtle bodies.
Oh. It was like this guy from New Zealand.
We will disagree on which songs we thought were the best and the worst, etc. But I think we all have our favorites because it's so subjective that it's gonna alienate people.
That's the beauty of art, Patrick.
It is. I agree. And I like that. And I'm glad they did it because
are you glad that I did that voice?
Yes, I kind of dug the voice. Okay. Would you do it again?
It's a new voice.
I don't know, Patrick. Would I? I think I might.
I think this should be something you do
a
in
new
our
voice?
In our next 200 episodes. Mm. The next 100, you make a note.
Noted.
I figured out that Dan's got an inside joke going.
That I won't tell anyone.
But yes, for our next 200 episodes,
my number one dad.
You got to do that voice. Yeah. Okay,
I already did it.
Yeah.
Oh, shit. Fucked it up. I should have saved it up.
I don't know. It's okay. It's okay. We can get people primed.
They won't remember. Mm-hmm. They won't remember.
But yeah. But anyway, this is. I want them to keep taking more risks like this because this Star Trek often did. The TOS did this all the time. Yeah.
What else can they do?
And
they,
some of the more fun episodes of Star Trek and just stories in general when they take a risk. Doesn't always work, but if they're doing it, X-Files did the same thing. Sometimes it didn't work, but you got some pretty classic stuff and out of
there's
going
only so many westerns you can do. You have to do a musical.
And yeah. I want to make it very clear, that I'm harping back to something I said before. I really did enjoy going to musicals and I did enjoy seeing my brother.
Harping? Like, is that a pun?
A you pun?
Harping?
Oh, hey, like a harp.
Yeah.
Like a harp.
I don't have a harp sound effect, do you?
Nobody I suggest does. You find a different tempo.
Yeah,
that was a joke. Remember he did that joke?
Yeah,
that was pretty good. Tempo. That was pretty good. Yeah. I was like,
He had another one too about some spaces.
But we will stipulate... Yeah. We will stipulate that Dan likes musicals.
I like musicals. I enjoy seeing professional musicals. I really enjoyed seeing my brother in musicals.
Yeah.
But I guess it's just this memory of like, and I wasn't exactly like, I didn't exactly need tons of attention to feel like wanted. But at the same time, it was always kind of like, I'm going to this thing where like my brother's getting all the attention. I'm just kind of sitting by like
76 trombones in the big parade.
So, you know, it's not like it ever bummed me out, but it is kind of like just kind of a memory of sort of being
there's
a kid
trouble
in a weird way.
Right here in River City.
Was he in Back to the Future, the musical?
No, I think he was in Guys and Dolls like 7 times.
Wow.
Yes. All right. So we will again stipulate our various tastes for musicals. Jesse, not quite as into into them beyond perhaps an intellectual
I like the concept of them, but
they aggravate
I'm him. Often let down by the music, I guess.
Mm-hmm. I love watching a bunch of people prance about in well-choreographed fashion. It's just that's just to my taste. So, yeah, good episode.
So were we going to talk about what the internet said?
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, first of all, before even that, I think just a couple of things to note. So the music, at least in part, was done by Kay Hanley and right. Tom Pulse. Is it Pulse or Pulci from Letters to Cleo?
Letters to Cleo,
So, I mean, there's quality here. I think I agree with you, Dan. The production quality and all this stuff was really good. Another little tidbit is that, by all accounts, Ron Moore, back in Deep Space Nine, he was pushing for a musical episode forever.
Really?
And he really wanted to do a musical episode on Deep Space Nine. And it just kept not being whatever the right time. And then they did the whole Vic Fontaine thing. And a lot of people forget now because Vic Fontaine is loved. But at the time, a lot of people were like, what the fuck is this Vic Fontaine bullshit?
I liked it.
and so once people were kind of negatively reacting to some of the Vic Fontaine stuff, they were like, producers were like, yeah, no, we're not going to do a musical one. So this is not a new idea, even in Star Trek, this idea of maybe doing a musical version of it.
I saw that Vic Fontaine guy in a show or movie recently.
Oh, I thought it was going to be like at the supermarket.
No. What was the actor's name?
He'd be like, hey, Pally.
You saw him at the food store?
Well, I wonder what you guys can keep talking food star, more like the Aldi or like the Publix or whatever.
Publix. You got a Publix?
No, I ain't got a Publix where I'm from.
They don't have Publix in where you live.
James Darren. What's James Darren been in?
James Darren. I think he's still alive.
I swear I saw him something recently.
He's in a lot of stuff, James Darren. He ain't nobody. But anyway, in terms of the internet, leading into this episode, I just think it's worth mentioning, especially for those people listening in the future.
Future. Time tunnel.
Because maybe, who knows what the opinions are of this episode at that point in time.
Oh, he was in this movie called Lucky, made in 2017 that I saw on Hulu recently. Ooh. That nobody else has probably seen. Sorry, anyway.
In the year 3000.
I'm glad I brought, made sure to point that out.
I too am indeed super glad that you've done that. what was that?
Vic Fontaine.
Oh yeah, the internet. What were people saying on the internet? Okay.
Oh.
But on the internet, leading up to this episode, a bunch of people were like, fuck this noise. I'm not going to watch this.
Just relax.
This is going to be fucking terrible.
Just relax.
Yeah, that's not all cool.
Now, there were other people who were like, look, I don't think I'm going to like this because I'm not into musicals. That's different. That's a totally rational and reasonable, perfectly fine position to have. But there was some hate on that. What's interesting is after an episode aired, I saw a lot of people.
Interesting.
I saw a lot of people being like, oh, you know what? I thought I was going to hate this, and I totally dug
this. The way you introduced that, that's why I said interesting, because I immediately knew where you were going to go with that, and I did actually find that interesting.
But you found it interesting before I said it.
Yeah, I know, because I know you. You just guessed. I know you.
We're old buds. We know each other.
Because you wouldn't have brought it up that way unless you were presenting
the
sort
structure
of a
suggested
subversion.
It would be hilarious if I was like, what's really interesting is like all those people agreed it was terrible.
Yeah.
Or all those people who said, I'm not going to watch it. In fact, they didn't watch it. So they had no opinion.
Exactly as bad as they thought it was going to be.
They did not comment on the internet.
Yeah, so I think largely a positive reception. At the baseline, I think a lot of people were like, at least this was a cool thing to do, even if some people thought it was a little silly.
It's very
or not
well
to their taste.
Done, and some of those folks can actually sing, or maybe they're actually singers.
Yeah.
The actor that plays Lon is actually a singer.
Well, I was wondering how much auto-tune, and there's probably some
lot.
Kind of...
There was a little,
And I bet there's...
The Klingons has
But they're real good at it now.
But I mean, I bet there's probably a digital vibrato they can... I don't know, but I'm sure there's some kind of digital vibrato they can add to people.
Benga sounded kind of funny.
Digital vibrato.
There's some digital vibrato.
Celia Gooding and Christina Chong, they're both professional singers.
They can sing. Yeah.
I'm not sure about the singing background of other folks, but I do think another...
It was convincing.
Another thing that they did well here. First of all, they pick good songs, right? That's one of the things when you're arranging music for somebody, especially somebody who doesn't have a lot of singing experience, you have to arrange it a certain way. You have to design the song such that it's going to work with that person's voice.
All the Spock bits were a certain way.
And we'll get to the songs. I kind of dug the Ethan Peck stick, but he clearly was not a singer.
Yeah. No,
and
he
was somebody who needed some help with that.
But it worked for his
character
ability.
Yeah. Yeah. For his ability and that character.
And the songs they gave Christina Chong and Celia Rose Gooding were appropriate for what their abilities were. And they even left Celia Rose Gooding until the very end, if you don't count the choral piece at the end.
Yeah.
But so she was kind of like...
She's the finale showstopper.
Yeah,
and then
Christina Chong was in the middle, being, keeping you your heart rate and excitement up.
There may be different judgment on that, but anyway.
Oh, really?
we'll get to it in a little bit.
I mean, if we're talking about the plot, that's one thing.
In a little bit.
If you want to have a problem with the plot.
A little bit. Anson Mount is another example where they were just like, we'll just have him singing like a rock and roll voice.
Yeah.
He's slightly rock and roll voice. And he, of course, I thought was just hilarious and great. He really got into it. He really was digging the choreography and doing the theater type stuff, the musical theater, especially on the bridge when it's so artificial. To get that style, on purpose. All the actors I thought did great. My understanding, I didn't watch all the behind the scenes stuff or whatever, but my understanding is some of them, I think Ethan Peck, I think a couple of them were really nervous.
Yeah, I'm sure they were.
I don't know about doing this episode.
Oh, I bet, yeah. Because singing is really something. You're really exposed when you're singing.
Oh, the other joke Pike made was, you see the connections between us when all we see are the empty spaces. Do you think that's a music joke, spaces, or do you think that's a stretch? Because spaces, you call them rests.
It can be a very...
Yeah, I was like, why is it a music joke?
I don't know.
That's a big esoteric
jump.
Reach, I think.
Yeah.
Space.
And well done.
There's a bunch of space.
But I don't think that's what
they travel through space.
But sometimes people... And they travel through space. Sometimes,
empty space.
And sometimes people...
Even though it's not actually empty.
And when people talk about art, they're like, it's important about the empty spaces, the things that
aren't usually
there.
Refer to
certain types of art.
They usually refer to that as the negative space.
They just say this, or they from music, they say this. I mean, they say rests is the actual term, but you'd say the space between the notes. That's not uncommon to say.
Too many
that.
Notes.
Space. It's the space
that's
between
an
the
joke.
Notes.
I was making an Amadeus joke. Too many notes. Mm-hmm. Amadeus?
Yeah,
the movie Amadeus?
I know Amadeus, the movie.
Starring Tom Hulce.
Now, there was some band where they told the bassist, just don't play too many notes. I can't remember if that was the Beatles. Or...
All right. Well, I think that does it for overall impressions, unless you have any other things. I mean, internet, we talked about people on the internet. We don't know about
people.
The future internet. If you're from the future, write us and let us know.
Fuck you, too. No, I'm just kidding.
Presumably, you're going to be...
Please listen to our show.
You're going to be from the future at some point, Jesse.
Oh, shit.
So,
that's right. That's the problem.
So before we get into the meat, I want to say they said the word quantum 5 times. They said the word improbability 13 times.
Whoa, 13.
But they said out of that, they said improbability field 9 times.
Wow.
But so the first two are prime numbers and the last one is not a prime number.
Oh, fuck. I didn't even think about that. Now I'm fucked.
Why are you fucked?
No.
You could just come up with a different thing that has prime numbers.
I don't know what to do when I see prime numbers that I didn't expect to see.
So new audience members, Dan's into primes. We don't need to go into details.
I'm not real good at it. There are mathematicians who are all they do is study primes. I'm not like that.
Well, there's also mathematicians that argue over whether or not one is a prime.
Well, it's number
I'm
one.
Sure there's a...
That's what prime means.
No, but...
Well, there you go. Damn.
You've convinced me.
Through linguistics, you've defeated math.
That's how... Yeah, language beats math every time.
They also said fold 14 times, and they said subspace fold 7 times, and this is a great segue because the first song is about subspace folds. Huh?
What's happening?
The first song is about folds.
And that's not from the show.
Yeah, that's from this show.
What?
That was the first song. That was a segue into the first discussion of the first song. All I heard is Jesse pulling on his vape pen over there.
I think it was appropriate.
Disapprovingly.
That was, yes.
Okay, that was from Guys and Dolls. Speaking of which.
I didn't even know what it was from that.
Yeah.
I don't know Guys and Dolls.
I know it all too well.
Well, what we can do is we can...
I was making a music joke.
Did he always play the same character?
you asked him about his brother played
in... He said that his brother like was Guys in Guys and Dolls like 7 times. Yeah.
He played that guy... That was all like.
So he didn't.
The
so
guy,
he didn't
play a doll.
He didn't play one of the dolls.
No. He didn't. He didn't play the guy who sings. I got my horse right here. His name is Paul Revere. He didn't play that guy.
Okay.
He played one of the other guys.
Well,
yeah. I just can't remember the names. It was so long ago.
Well, at least he didn't play that guy. Because I never heard of that one. I don't even know that guy.
Right. I can look it up.
Okay, well, you look it up because it's time for us to take a break.
Let's take a break.
Okay.
We will take a quick break.
After all of that.
When we get back, Dan will have a character breakdown for Guys and Dolls, and we will start talking about the actual...
Fried Green Tomatoes.
Actual music in the show. Fried Green Tomatoes is awesome. All the book, the movie...
And the food.
And the food, per The Simpsons.
It's quite refreshing.
Very good. All right, we will be right back. Okay, we're back.
He wasn't Nathan Detroit. I think he was Sky Masterson.
God, these names are so silly.
I know. There's someone else called Nicely Johnson.
Okay, so
and Arvid Abernathy.
Arvid.
Look, I said I like musicals. And I do.
Arvid.
I do, but I don't
there's
like...
There's Lieutenant Brannigan, of course.
I don't like all musicals. There are plenty of musicals I find annoying or that I'm not into or that the style just doesn't suit me.
Do you like
me.
Rent?
I'm not a huge fan of Rent. I respect Rent. Not a huge fan of that style of music. The story is good, but Cats, I'm not into that.
Nah.
I don't know. Who, I don't
fan
know,
of the
anyone,
opera, I'm not even really into that.
Too. I don't know if there's...
Yeah, that Lloyd Webber guy's.
Lloyd Webber.
There's not that...
He pushes the wrong buttons in me.
I think there's not many people of this generation that are really that into Cats. It didn't help with the movie freaked everyone out, but like...
I'd be more into the movie when they had the buttholes, but then they edited out the buttholes.
Yeah.
Remember they had the whole butthole thing with Cats?
Yeah.
So people in the future who are listening to this podcast in the future, they did a version of Cats, the movie, which by all accounts was not particularly good, but the best thing it had going for it
had
is
a bunch of people.
The first few days, like the CGI human cats that looked like horrific monstrosities, you could see their anus areas,
and
for lack of a better term.
Idris Elba, right?
Yes, I don't know if you could see his anus area.
This is going to be extra weird to people in the future because in the future...
Because then they edited it out.
In the future, cats won't have buttholes at all, and they'll be like, cats used to... Why would the
cat
have a butthole?
Are you talking about cats or Cats the musical?
No, in the future, real cats.
Because they beam out the poops?
Cats.
Actual cats, they'll breed the buttholes out of cats in the future. So
is that for beam? Is that so you could be, do you, is it like in Star
how
Trek?
How do you
can
breed
beam?
The buttholes out?
That's what they do in the future. And
how
so when,
that, how is that
so when
work?
Patrick talks about a musical with cats having buttholes, they're going to be like, whoa, that's weird, but for the wrong reasons. We're just talking about.
That's a work of fiction.
Anyway.
Well, this episode was about improbable probabilities.
Sonic the Hedgehog.
Improbable
they
realities.
Had to redo Sonic the Hedgehog's teeth in the movie. Sonic.
Well, they had to redo everything on Sonic the Hedgehog.
I think
his eyes looked weird and everything.
I think the
weird.
Teeth freaked people out a lot.
Well, anyway, this episode did not freak too many people out. It
just
freaked
relax.
Out fewer people than we would have maybe otherwise expected.
Mm-hmm. Good.
Because it's just people singing.
No animated buttholes or anything like that. It was largely a charming exercise in...
animated buttholes.
In
it's like playing, some John Waters movie.
In playing some music. okay, so first song. What was the first song called? I have that right here. Oh, yeah. Okay, before we even get to the first song, actually.
The first song was the best, I think.
Yeah, but before we even get to the first song, there's Star Trek Strange New World's main title, Subspace Rhapsody version.
Oh, right. It was some kind of like... It wasn't a cappella, but it had that feel to
okay.
it.
Okay, I skipped over it. But
it had the
feel. Oh, you skipped it. Yeah,
yeah
they redid
I'm
this.
Lame.
Yeah, you are lame. Mm-hmm. You never, because with the, did you
now
skip
you guys know.
Did you skip over it on the animated, on those old scientists? Because they animated, they
no,
did the whole animated.
No,
movie.
I watched them.
All right, good. Well, I liked what they did. I liked that they redid the music for the opening theme. Which is, I guess this is an example of that.
That's
that was,
good.
Yeah,
I
that was
like
the very
that.
End
yeah.
of it.
It was good. But I thought they could have gone a little bolder. This is this is one of the areas where I was like, oh, you know what? I thought they could have gone way more bombastic. Mm. They decided to do this sort of semi, a cappella business. And I thought, it was good. I enjoyed it. But I was like, ooh, this would have been fun. And partly I think it's because I don't know if you ever heard it. There's like some old like disco version of Star Trek where they do like a disco a cappella like ridiculous thing. Now that might have been absurd, but it made me primed for something, wanting something a little bit more like lively and bombastic.
Maybe they figure half the people are going to skip over it anyway or something. I don't know.
Well, yeah. I mean, at least one third of the people.
Yeah.
Going by if we have a poll of this. This Jesse looks so sad.
Yeah, he's not even. He's thinking about something else.
Maybe that's why he looks sad. Okay, so that was the opening.
You listen back, and you'll figure it out.
Okay, then the real first song, the actual song
with Spock.
Status report
was status report. Yes, status report, which was
status report.
It part of what's great about this, and I agree with you, Dan, from your comment earlier. Both of you, sort of the implication that a second viewing is good, right? You do get more out of it the second viewing. I enjoyed it the first time, but a second viewing, like everything made more sense in context. Mm-hmm. And so this whole status report song, it not only does it establish that they're kind of going balls to the wall with regard to this whole musical business,
why are we singing?
But using the Star Trek terms is part of what makes this charming, right? And this happens throughout all these songs where they use, talking about paradigms.
They did regular like bridge stuff. Like,
yes.
Like, all the, you know.
Perfect. I interrupted you, Jesse. I'm sorry. I got so excited. I got really excited.
They were singing about all the bridge procedure and all the stuff they say, and they go back and forth. They were singing it instead.
Yeah. So this leads into
they were singing Star Trek.
This what I'm about to do.
It was the most singingest Star Trek in the whole Star Trek musical.
This what I'm gonna do.
You were aggressively waving your hand.
This leads back
people
into
people at home. You can't see it, but this finger is going pointing. All over the place.
He's pointing his finger all over.
He's pointing it here and there.
This leads into an old debate.
At this laptop and this laptop.
I know the debate he's talking about.
Not really.
Yes.
It's not a debate, I guess, but more of a discussion.
Yes. Vampers.
God damn it, Jen.
Oh shit! Oh no!
I was working so hard not to say it.
They're not
even though I knew what you were talking about.
Yeah. Well.
All right.
Don't cut that. You might as well keep it in.
Of course, I'm not going to cut that.
That's part of the joke.
That's okay.
All right. But anyway, it's the inertial dampeners. Because the audience is.
What I was going to do is I was going to do this.
Right. We check inertial dampers and see if they're hampered.
I don't think they were.
But Mr. Skip to Malou over here, like, jumped in on it.
Again,
that's sometimes that's how the universe works, Dan.
Shaping the context for the audience.
Wait, is it just, he's taking all agency away from himself.
Because he's evil. Yes, just for a little contest. This is, of course, and I don't think this is going to be new to most people listening. We, along with much of the Star Trek fandom, have over the years discussed and debated fact that they have regularly used two different terms for the magic devices which keep them from turning into squishy spaghetti at the back of the starship when it goes to warp. The inertial dampers versus the inertial dampeners.
We check inertial dampers and see if they're
and what's interesting
see if they are hampered.
Yep. See if they are hampered. What's interesting also is that in the
hampered
in the past few years
I don't think it was hampered.
In the past few years Star Trek has sort of moved towards the dampener. I felt like Discovery, I think they were always saying dampener.
And we really need to like.
I remember.
We need to take
I
a census.
It's just a difference in.
So we need to do a structured word search.
Some people say
all the scripts.
Some people say penguin and some people say penguin.
I mean, Jesse, not wrong, but he's sort of missing the point. We want to know what the fuck's going on. I want a trend line graph.
Right.
Dampers versus dampeners from 1966 on.
The reason I say the past few years is because I remember the reason I brought it up is because they used to always say dampers. And I remember having this conversation. Let me finish. No. Then you can tell me I'm wrong.
No.
I had a discussion with a friend and I was like, is it dampeners or dampers? He was like, I think it's dampers. And then I listened, I was like, yeah, they say dampers a lot in the old. And then the newer ones, I was always hearing, I remember specifically in the newer ones, I was always hearing dampeners.
How
and
does Spock say?
And that's why I kept bringing it up. Now, Patrick's going to tell me I'm wrong because they originally said dampeners or something.
I'm not going to tell you
how
you're
does
wrong.
Spock say it?
I'm going to tell you, well, that's the thing is, I'm going to tell you, this is why I want the study done. And I, who knows, maybe we'll have to do it ourselves, because I want to find the answer, because my impression is actually the opposite. My impression is that, like, on TNG and stuff, they were always saying dampeners. But I could be. I fully admit that. I'm just telling you what my...
I think there's been some variation. Yes.
Completely inexpert impression, just instinctual impression, which very likely could be wrong.
So any one of us could be right, because we don't have any evidence to support it. But all I'll say about it is that I have this strong... feeling. I'm basing my science off of emotion. I understand. But like, really, no, it's based in logic, because I was really into comparing those two, and then I kept bringing it up because I thought it was weird they said dampers, but then it made sense, and then I was like, wait, they're saying dampeners again. So I could be just as wrong as anyone else.
Maybe,
but
it works
usually
better for the song.
Yeah, maybe. Commercial dampeners. Yeah.
Because dampeners, it's like a grace note.
Damper and hamper.
It adds an ornament or a grace note that you might not necessarily need.
And the rhyming word has two syllables, and dampers has two syllables. Yeah. Anyway, okay. So we can move on from that.
Anyway, that was a fascinating display.
I'm going to get a spreadsheet going.
I'm going to get us pregnant.
Let's get a spreadsheet. Get us pregnant.
I'm going to take you out back and get you pregnant.
He's pregnant with ideas.
Do you happen to have a clip of the very end of that song with Pike?
I don't. I might not have, because I remember grabbing a Pike later.
Where's that music coming from?
When he was like, well, that happened.
Where's that music coming
well,
that, from?
Well, yeah, that's when they came back from it. But yeah. I thought it was just a strong ending where he was like, but why are we singing?
Yeah. I should have.
Anyway, it was just that was a well-crafted opening song to sort of lay down the framework. And
Absolutely.
Then, boom. Wait.
I think that's like one of the few times Ortega's actually sings.
Yes, there's not a lot of Ortega's singing. There's not a lot of Mbenga singing. Just a couple bits and pieces here.
But it's
here
pretty
there.
Tight.
Oh, yeah. He sang in some part. Was
a headache, a splinter.
A left ankle sprain.
Yeah, that was Chapel.
He's got some cool bit at the end.
Where he's
in the
dancing around. All right. Anything else from Status Report?
Poof into bunnies.
I doubt we will be bunnies.
Nope, that was actually the wrong sound.
But do you know what that's from? Do you know what that's a reference to?
Something about magic?
No, that's a reference, presumably a reference to Once More with Feeling, which was an episode of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, which they did a musical. Mm. It was a musical version of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, I believe, from the sixth season. And there's a line in there somewhere about the singing, because it's a similar thing where everyone's singing and dancing. And
I skipped over that episode when I was watching.
Because even back then you hated music.
I was like, I don't need to.
You're like, fuck this.
Wait, did I skip over it? I can't remember.
I mean, I think you'd probably remember this episode. But regardless, there's a line in there about like bunnies potentially, like bunnies being evil or whatever and causing the singing. Anyway, it was a throwaway joke in that episode. But it seems here that this must be an overt reference to that episode, because this episode shares a structural similarity to Once More with Feeling from Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Buffy the Vampire Slayer featured a lot of like bad sort of 90s music. Like they would just have it like all of a sudden.
I never watched that show.
Well, it was a solid show except for certain 90s music.
I never saw my so-called life either.
Oh, I watched that. Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I know. I'm a bummer.
It's okay. Whatever.
This is what I meant to play.
I do not sing. I would prefer not to be a bunny either.
Yeah.
Actually, I thought that
almost sounded like banana.
That line where he was like,
"Did he say banana?"
He's like, "And I do not sing." Yeah, was like, "Jesus, that's fucking scary." When he said that, it was like some serious shit.
I know. It's like,
especially after last week's.
I would prefer not to be a bunny either.
Yeah,
I do not sing. I would prefer not to be a bunny either.
Yeah, following last week's episode or last week's episode. Jesus, fucking Paramount Plus throwing all this Star Trek at us. It's crazy.
Our emotions
threw me off.
Emotions.
You like how he said
our emotions.
Emotions.
Do you mean last week's
Star Trek
Thursday
episode? Not the podcast, because we did that it's complicated.
So anyway, the summation of this first song was just them figuring out what's going on. That was the first song.
Hey,
yeah,
what's going on?
Yeah.
Tell me what's the buzz.
And it worked well.
Tell me what's happening.
Okay, then it moves into connect to your truth.
Mm-hmm.
Which was cute. I did think it was a sort of adorable thing with Kirk
Kirk keeps popping up, man.
Okay, so here's the thing. Again, I'm starting to get a little annoyed with the Kirk business.
Yeah.
However, it's still, like I've said before, it works. They keep making it work with Kirk the characters.
Yeah.
And the concept of Kirk shadowing a premier first officer before he takes on the role of first officer, that makes sense.
It's, I can buy it.
And but as I mentioned, I think the last, whatever the last episode he was, he showed up in, they're giving each of the bridge crew time with Kirk so that when it comes time to suggest a new captain, everyone's going to be like, what about that Kirk guy?
Yeah, right.
Like Captain Pike is going to do that.
He keeps working. Uhura's going to do that. He's worming his way in.
Una's going to do that. La'an's going to, everyone's going to be like, oh yeah, get that Kirk guy. He's rad. But yeah, it's getting to be a little, it's a lot.
Kirk's when you put it like that, it makes sense.
It was a very My Fair Lady style, and I think that worked well with Una. Because she likes Gilbert and Sullivan.
Right.
And so this was sort of My Fair Lady, a little bit Gilbert and Sullivan.
Gilbert Sutherland.
Gilbert and Sutherland. Adorable. Had a little message in there about handing some leadership lessons to Kirk. Dancing, doing a little bit of a waltz. And Jeffrey's tubes. Kirk's always in the Jeffrey's tubes.
Will do.
It was so silly.
Tubes.
So I guess this one is about Lon was dealing with her emotions about I call him J Kirk. I call him J Kirk.
Are you talking about the next song? Or
J- oh, sorry. I went to the... Sorry. I was wrong.
You're just like, fuck that song.
No, but,
I don't know. There might not be anything else to say about that. Did you like anything else about that or hate it? Or
what I will say about Lon, I guess she was looking at...
she was staring.
At first, I thought it was she was like jealous a little bit of Una, but well, that doesn't really...
I think so.
But she was more jealous of the fact, I think, that Una was able to connect with...
Yeah. Like, and it wasn't
like, the, it wasn't like you're gonna you're taking you know,
it's one of the things is because they've set this up in a musical framework, it comes with coming with what comes with that is the musical language, the musical theater language.
So what you're saying is
there's a cinematic vocabulary for all the various genres, and musicals have a certain vocabulary. One thing that you might have noticed they did in this is they framed a lot of shots differently. Musicals, you want to show more of the whole person because they're going to be dancing and prancing about.
So they were doing that. They were prancing about.
There's a lot fewer close-ups, and even La'an, it's not a close-up of La'an, it's like her poking her head around the corner.
Yeah, she's all like,
And she's spying around the corner like you're watching like Figaro or something, like an opera, where it's like the characters are like, ooh, I'm finding out information that I shouldn't know.
It was super theatrical.
And because of that language, it does make it feel like jealousy because that would be used traditionally in the musical or opera for jealousy.
She was all peering. She was like skulking and then peering around all like,
Skulking and peering.
We're singing again.
She was sneaking.
I call that style of command a first mistake. Kind that makes my head shake and my heart break.
Yeah, I was
like I said, My Fair Lady.
Yeah, some of those opening like super like kept rhyming. I think it happened in like the Private Conversation too. It was cute, but it felt a little
girlfriend. All
right. With my new commission to a higher position,
I'm all bopping back and forth. Renditions.
Connect to your crew.
Will do.
Will do.
All right. Next song. How would that feel? And that is the La'an song.
Yeah, I didn't like that one. I mean, she's pretty good at singing, but I didn't like the
she's
song.
She's great at singing.
What I meant about that, like Christian rock, to pick you up in the middle was less the plot, and more it was like a big number for her to show off her voice.
And so
I
enjoyed this much better the second run through because I think part of the problem here is she's great.
Fast forward.
Part of the problem is she's great. part of the problem is she's great.
Semicolon underscore if then statement.
Well, she can just sing a
curly
song.
Brackets.
Christina Chong, she's a fucking amazing, right? She can really belt out these tunes.
Absolutely.
And she's really good at this song. The first time I listened to this song, I was like, this is where I was a little bit bored. And I was like, why am I bored? And I realized on the second run through, the song is great.
I don't like the song.
Well, in my opinion, I was like, I dug the song. The problem is all the information in the song, it's a long way of providing us information we already know.
And said we don't, right, and right. We already know it. We don't really need to.
It's all stuff that's very easy to intuit from just her peering around the corner.
But it's very, it fits in with the whole musical concept.
It does.
Like, you totally expect her to have her own song based on what happened.
And it's got this gossipy feel about like, oh, we're learning about her life, exactly. You know, her, who she loves and stuff like that.
I can't help it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, there you go. I mean, like,
can't help it.
It was sort of, and that was where I first realized or first figured out that they were, you know, allowing everyone to have very different styles, because whereas the previous song was more whimsical, My Fair Lady, whatever, this was more like Disney's Frozen, sort of more contemporary,
right,
power ballad.
I didn't like that style of music.
How would that feel?
You know, do you want to build a snowman?
That's how would that feel?
Do you want to build a snowman?
How would that feel?
Do you want to build?
I'm not into it.
A snowman.
How would that feel?
Now, granted. That's the thing is why I like the song, because I do want to build a snowman.
Right, yeah.
When I hear the song, Do You Want to Build a Snowman, I fucking start crying my eyes out.
How would that feel?
I don't like it when it snows, and I'm glad that it doesn't.
So, relax.
So I'm into the music style, but I was thinking about it. I was like, oh, it's because, you know, we're not, the other ones, we're seeing stuff happen. We're seeing plot advance. Yes, technically that's happening here, but we kind of already know what's going on here. So I think of all the songs, this jumped out at me the least.
Yeah, just her dealing with her emotions about Jay Kirk.
And I think maybe I was a little aggravated about that too, being like, I don't dislike it. I'm just like, oh, there's so much Kirk in Strange New Worlds. Yeah. And I want to see more.
There's been a lot of
Kirk,
man. This is supposed to be fucking Pike.
Will do.
It does help, though, that even though I still don't buy Paul Wesley as James D. Kirk for whatever reason, I like him. He's a good actor. I think he interacts well with the other characters.
He's winning me over.
Yeah, he's interesting. He's making this character interesting.
Yeah.
Especially the whole business with mentioning Carol Marcus and pregnant with David, all that stuff that happens.
Klingon's gonna kill him.
On a sort of a tangential note, speaking of Kirk, I like the line when Spock was all explaining the whole thing that was going on. And what I liked about this, when Kirk was like, great job, I almost understood what you said. What I liked is that normally they would say, like, in English, Spock, like that's not just Star Trek. Like, that's the classic, like, in English, man. Like, when somebody speaks science-y talk.
Or Data, or whichever nerd is
yeah, talking. Speaking science talk, so they switched it up, which is nice. But also, when you say in English, man, you're putting the responsibility on the speaker. But James Kirk was putting the responsibility on himself. He's like, you did a great job, I just couldn't understand it. I know it was a throwaway
line.
It's
also rather Anglo-centric.
That was a good one.
I know it's a throw. Yeah, it's
it was building the rapport between the future rapport between and, Kirk and
because people
and,
actually speak other languages other than English.
Yeah,
and I just
like better. Federation standard.
You may not have known that.
The point I was more making is they took something that was normally they'd throw in a cliche and move on with it, but they made it actually a little bit. They put more effort. I felt into that one line when you could normally just throw it in there and move on and no one would notice. But
yes, which makes up for a little bit of I didn't have this critique, but one critique on the internet was a lot of people were aggravated when, and you, one of you mentioned it earlier, when Pike said that just happened or whatever. Some people were like, "Marr."
No, I thought that was great.
I didn't even notice it one way or the other, but
it was a total Pike thing to do.
Yeah.
He's like,
Pike is cute. He's something,
cute. Something.
Pike is cute. He's
I'm being cute.
Well, something, something.
And speaking of Pike, talking about quality segues, staying on topic, the next song was called Private Conversation.
Do we want to talk about anything that happened between the songs?
If there's something important that pops up.
I guess there was.
I mean, because that's, you mentioned the explanation of the business.
Well, Lon talks about the singing being a security threat. They start talking about what's
that's just
because
she's,
is.
Well, no, it's a good point. Lon does have the, it's that classic, she has a totally legitimate point, but it's also completely going to benefit her.
Yeah.
Because she's freaked out about revealing her terrible secrets.
There's that thing with the time travel stuff.
Yes, of course.
That's, I guess.
And same thing with you presume with Dr. Mbenga, he doesn't want to admit all his
oh, yeah, right.
terrible crimes.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I guess Uhura had a theory where she was just like, we're in a musical reality, so we're following the rules of musicals. I mean, like, I guess that was kind of assumed at that point.
But... Well, not necessarily.
A musical reality.
I like that they made it overt, and they made it part of the plot that you had to have that whole, like, emotional thing.
Pike was all surprised when Spock agreed that they should blow the thing up.
Yeah.
Because he was like, let's blow it up. And Spock was like, yeah, that's a good idea.
Spock likes to blow shit up, dude.
Oh, and they played, actually, this is, they played from another musical. They played, do you remember what other musical they played a song
Anything
from?
Goes.
Yeah, Anything Goes.
Yeah, and I have to play this part because it's like the most, no, this is the most awesome trombone, like, part, one of the almost awesomest trombone parts.
And you're a, you're a boner.
Olden days, a glimpse of stocking was a look down to something shocking, but now God knows, anything goes. Good authors too, who once
that was like Anything Goes.
It's good teta
Anything Goes.
Wasn't the musical Anything Goes like sort of slapped together at the last second or something?
Was it? I don't know.
Didn't you guys do that in high school?
We did. Now see, here's the thing. I know after listening to that, people are going to say, but Dan, that's not that fantastic of a trombone part. That's silly. It's a simple thing. You must not have played many trombone parts. And to that I say,
Dan is a he's a big time boner.
I have played trombone parts.
You have,
Dan is a hardcore boner.
I played the solo that all the trombone players play when they go for when they audition for colleges.
Trombone.
Do you remember what the one it goes like? It goes like this. It goes burr. It goes burr, 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 burr. It's this famous trombone solo that begins some kind of thing, and it like is super high and it's really hard to play. I played that, and with
there's the Mahler Third Symphony.
So I played some trombone solos, and then someone else might say, well, Dan, what about that trombone solo that's all like bam, like that's a pretty good that's a good one too. But the problem with that one, well, the thing about that one is that's more of like a maverick solo. Like that's when a trombone is being a smartass off on his own. What I like about this is it just feels all fun and boppy, and it's like such a perfect like bass melody kind of trombone part. You're just going like burp, 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 burp. And I don't know, something about it synergizes into just this really awesome. I played that in high school, yeah, and when I played it, every time I was so psyched to play that one part, even though it was just like everyone else is probably like, who cares about that?
Because you were
part
in the pit, you're in the pit band.
Mm-hmm.
And we're gonna have a spinoff podcast called It's Got Bones with Dan.
What's trombone in Spanish, Dan?
Trombone.
No one's gonna get that. That's
yeah, trombone. What's trombone in Spanish?
Trombone.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what. What do you know? What I'm gonna have to look it up.
It's just trombone. Sorry, this is based off of some conversation I had.
Inside baseball.
Yeah, for real.
All right. Speaking of inside baseball, let's talk about Private Conversation.
Mm-hmm.
This cute song with Anson Mount.
And it's cool. It all gets cut off. Like they shut it off.
Oh yeah,
abruptly ends, and like he's about to start like going. Like,
It was fun, and this was one of the examples that I was trying to mention at the beginning of the show about making sure that things work with the characters. And in this case, I think both Anson Mount and Melanie Scrofano, who plays Captain Patel,
this is a private conversation.
Neither of them appear to be like they're not like. super excited to be singers necessarily. Not that they don't have talent. It's just that they got a different vibe going.
They make it work.
But it actually, the awkwardness, there is a little bit of awkwardness there that completely works because of the context of they're having this private conversation in front of the whole bridge crew and they're singing it and it's silly. And Pike, even at the end of it, goes down to his knees and does that whole like praying to God type motion. Really extremely silly, but for me, it worked.
Mm-hmm. Because she likes the idea of room service and he likes camping.
Yeah, well, camping sucks, dude.
Well, I mean, I was making the point that they like different things.
Opinion.
She wants to
remember when Pike Pike was in his office or whatever. Maybe it was his quarters, and he was looking at pictures of like trees and stuff.
Yeah.
And I thought, at first, I was like, is he looking at the vacation place that she's talking about? And then I was like, oh, no, he must be looking at camping locations.
She wanted to go to a cave or something.
Well, the thing is, she wanted to go to this tourist planet, and I wish they had shown pictures of it and made it really look silly, like as if where she wanted to go was like some fucking like. you know, Sandals Resort,
Sandals.
You know, type thing. Like, not that there's anything wrong with Sandals.
Atlantis.
Yeah, or like a cruise ship or something. Yeah, again, not a bad place, place that lots of people want to go. But
perfectly
like,
entertaining.
I wanted a visual of what Pike was horrified by. I think
a switch inside me flips. A switch inside me flips.
Flips.
Some kind of 23rd century rise of planet.
What am I saying to you?
Yeah, they let him use his rock and roll voice.
Am I saying?
When the last part.
What am I saying to you?
Now this.
Do you?
Isn't that weird?
Do you? Do you? Do you? Do you? Do you? Do you? What am I saying?
What am I saying?
Do you? Do you?
Yeah, it's good. Okay, audience at home, Dan is just staring at Jesse, laughing his ass off. Jesse's looking at Jesse like, what the fuck are you looking at me?
Chris, you always do this.
What did I do?
Chivo, bro.
Captain, can we have a private conversation?
Yeah.
In a more discreet location. Burp, 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 about our burp, canceled burp, vacation.
Oh, no.
A switch inside me flips.
Flips. It flips.
Conversation.
Flips.
He did some weird things when he was singing, like.
He did some twitches.
To sort of get some belts some and things out. All
about our frustration.
He did. He did a lot of funny things.
It sounds like Butthead from Beavis and Butthead. Yeah. Butthead from Beavis and Butthead. The other Butthead.
Which Butthead are you talking about?
No, when he's like singing like Pearl Jam or something, he's all like,
Yeah.
Speaking of Pearl Jam, I suggest we take a break.
Weird.
When we come back, we'll talk about the rest of the songs and kind of wrap things up. Rhapsody things up. Subspace Rhapsody things up. Does that work, Dan?
Yeah, I guess.
All right,
for you, motherfucker?
We'll be right back.
I liked it.
Okay, we are back.
All right. So that happened.
Yes, that happened.
Olden days, a glimpse of stocky was a look down at something shocky, but now God knows
everything goes.
Okay. It's nice when a trombone line utilizes space like that, and you're playing separate notes instead of going like.
Yeah, right. It just fits with the song like so perfectly.
Yeah,
you fit with the song so perfectly.
You ever hear those like descending or ascending lines that work perfectly with some shit? Like,
it just always comes back.
Counterpoint. It's delightful counterpoint.
Yeah, delight. Thank you, Jesse. It
comes back to
delightful
the
counterpoint.
You. Well, you guys are always talking about bones.
Trombone, great instrument.
That bone was my bone.
This is my bone.
That's my purse.
That's
I don't know you. Okay. Stream of consciousness finished and stream of podcast begun.
Stream of podcast.
Okay, what's next? Keeping Secrets.
Star Trek.
Keeping Secrets.
Keeping Secrets. This was the bizarre one. This was another one that didn't quite hit it for me. It was with number one and La'an.
She was just telling Lon how to deal with their emotions with Kirk. And at first I thought she was saying like, maybe you should keep some secrets.
That's the thing is it was confusing.
Yeah. Cause it seemed like, I thought that's where they were going to go. Like, cause Lon was like, I'm going to tell him. And I thought she was going to be like, well, maybe hold off. But then it turned into like, don't keep secrets.
The reason it was confusing was because knowing what you know of Una and knowing what you know of the structure of what the romance here, of course, the advice, the obvious advice, both the storyline calls for and Una's recent experience calls for, both of them simultaneously call for Una to say, no, you should take a risk and be open and be true to yourself, true to your own feelings. That's the message. And so when she starts off saying the opposite is confusing. Now, again, you know, when you watch it a second time, you're like, okay, they're doing the whole musical theater thing, tricky thing, but it kind of didn't work. That and the turning off the gravity,
but
I didn't like.
But yeah, that was weird. When they start floating for some
reason.
That
weirded me out.
But I think over the course of the
song, this is not Moulin Rouge.
But I think that over the course of the song, it seemed like Una was started to turn towards like, don't keep secrets, because that's what I got out of it.
That's the message she turns to. But what I'm saying is confusing is because the message she's supposed to say.
Yeah,
and then she doesn't say it. Like at first, she's no, secrets are great. And then you get what they're doing. I know what they're doing. All the audience at home is going to be like, no, it makes sense. I know from a musical theater perspective, it makes sense. I was just like, from a watching it at home thing, I was like,
right, yeah.
Eh. This is confusing. Even though I knew what they were gonna, I knew she was gonna change at the end, but I don't know. Secrets I keep safe inside. This was like a very 1980s style.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? This was not so contemporary.
Like a Meatloaf song.
Yeah, sort of. Yeah.
Whoops.
That's the wrong one. Yeah.
Or like the guy that wrote the Meatloaf song.
The guy who did the what?
There was a dude that wrote all those songs for Meatloaf, and he did some other songs that were like some pop hits also that Meatloaf didn't perform.
Were those songs, what? Yeah, that was the other guy.
But they were all pot super
roast.
Like...
Pot Roast performed those songs.
Pot Roast.
Pot Roast.
They were all like, you know, super musical theater style, like Meatloaf.
Salisbury Steak.
And I guess they floated because they did something with the fold and it made everyone float, I guess.
No, they, okay.
I think it was just, you know, it was musical reality.
No. Okay, so the second time watching this is my interpretation.
A musical reality.
Exactly.
I want people to write in, tell me if I'm wrong on social media edits, Scott Star Trek, or feedback.
I think they were doing something
to
the ship that made the gravity go funky.
No, I'm going to tell you what I think happened, because I think I saw what happened. Because if you look,
you better shut up and listen.
If you look, yeah, no.
Everyone's like, oh, dude, Jesse's back. He wasn't here last episode. Now he's back.
What are you talking about? Which episode?
He's haranguing us and tutting.
Wait a minute. Did you do an episode without me?
All right, so with the gravity.
Wait a minute.
With the gravity. What? You can, while they're singing, while Una's singing, you can see her pick up a pad, she pushes a button, and then the gravity goes off. And then, like, she's got the pad while they're floating around in the sky as if it's like they're supposed to be some romantic partners, which doesn't make sense.
Oh, was she controlling the pad with love?
And no, she was controlling the gravity with the pad.
With love?
No, she was controlling the gravity with the pad, because then she pushes the button.
Not her love.
She pushes the button on the pad, and then they, again, and then they sink back down.
Why would she do that?
For effect, I guess.
That's what I'm saying. No, but my question is like, my question was more rhetorical. It was like, why the fuck would she?
Yeah, exactly. I think it's, I didn't like that.
Yeah.
I thought that was a little, that for me, that was the part that was a little silly.
Yeah.
So that happened.
Yeah, precisely. Mm-hmm. Anything else about keeping secrets?
Emotions, talking about they start floating. Oh, yeah, I guess it also kind of bleeds into Spock and Chapel's situation a little bit, and they're talking about secrets, and then I guess they're talking a little bit about Pi, because they go to Spock and Chapel, and then they go to, like, you know, Pike, and, you know, there's this theme of, like, you know, relationships and what conversations and communications.
Yeah, I didn't catch that.
And
yeah, you're right.
So I guess that's...
And there's, I mean, the whole thing is about communication in the end, the whole horror thing.
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, next song, I'm Ready.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
That's what it's called.
Are you ready for the next song?
Are you ready?
I'm ready.
I loved this one.
Mm.
This one was my favorite of the bunch.
I didn't love it, but I figured it was a decent song.
You know, that's so funny because, like, I think this was my least favorite of the bunch, actually.
Really?
Well, yeah. Well, then.
That's interesting.
All right, let's throw down.
Let's throw down.
What was it that you... Now, I'll tell you
what
why
was
I
your
liked
most
it.
Favorite?
I don't know.
You don't know.
Maybe it was the next one. But anyway,
it wasn't my least favorite, but it was down there, like, as one of the ones that I didn't really...
Down there.
It
honestly surprises me.
Yeah. I think I agreed with Jesse more on, like, the top songs, I think, those for this.
I love this.
This was maybe middle or just below middle.
I thought this was, like, second place.
Oh, really?
As far as the songs, yeah. Like, I dug the intro and the finale, and I thought this was, like, you know, number two.
So I guess the whole thing that was going on,
because it had a lot of voices in it. When I didn't like the solo songs so much, I liked it when there was more ensemble singing.
Yeah, I tended to like that too.
It was more interesting.
I like the raspiness. I like the jazziness.
It was a good change of pace.
I like the slithery choreography that looked like some sort of like 1960s, like one of those weird nightclubs where everyone's dancing weird.
It fits in with Chapel's character somehow.
So I also like strong female characters.
That kind of singing.
So I guess what was going on here is Spock was basically, the song started when Spock was like, hey, so what's going on? Why didn't you tell me you're going, blah, blah. And then she just kicks into the song, and all she starts doing is singing about how she's going to go away to the thing. She never answers his question, but I guess the implication is that she answered the question by kind of, like, just saying, like, I'm going.
Yeah.
Kind of, but in ultimately, she ignored him entirely.
Yeah, pretty much, but he's so fucking sensitive. So he gets all bent out of shape.
Right, so this is interesting because...
Like, but he didn't really get any answers, but he's just like, well, fuck.
In the last episode, the one you weren't part of, Jesse, we talked about how...
Yeah, what was this? When did this happen?
Yeah.
Are you telling... what else aren't you telling?
The last episode, there was an issue where Spock kept, like, being sensitive about Chapel feeling weird about Doc Ra, you know, feeling, like, trauma from Doc Ra. Yeah. And he wanted to help, but she
from
was...
what?
Doc Ra.
It was in the episode?
Yeah, it was in the episode. Admiral Doc Ra, yeah. Oh, okay. Yes.
No, Ambassador.
I'm sorry. Ambassador. No, it's okay. Ambassador.
Formerly general.
I was not in this podcast.
Yeah, you weren't. Where were you, Jesse?
I don't know. You didn't tell me.
We're in an undisclosed location.
I was on a secret mission.
So Spock wanted to help her, but she was basically like, I need to deal with this on my own. And Spock took it as like, oh, you just don't want to be with me.
Yeah.
So he was being overly sensitive. But in this one, she actually was like discluding, not including.
Discluding.
Not including.
Dr. Corby.
Excluding.
Yeah, okay, there you go.
Yeah, I know.
Dr. Corby ensemble.
She was.
I prefer discluding. It's a better word.
She was excluding Spock specifically from this episode. So maybe Spock was right last episode to be sensitive because maybe she was actually. It wasn't just that she didn't want to talk to him because she had to deal with the trauma on her own. She actually didn't want to specifically talk to Spock. But then it could also be that she didn't want to go away. She didn't want to get too close to Spock right before she was going away. But it's only like two or three months. So I don't know what.
Right. It's just a few months. Yeah. Like, what? Who? Come on.
Yeah. I agree really. With Jesse that yeah. I think that.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Though.
Spock overreacted a little bit. But the thing is that there's been not hate for this song. I think a lot of people really like this song. A lot of people put it among their favorites, as I do. But a lot of people interpret this song as Nurse Chapel being like really mean to Spock.
I didn't think she was mean to him. I think she was basically letting him know that she wasn't. But I don't understand why the communication is so strange.
Well, the
them.
Thing is if you remember, if you like track their relationship, it's first of all, it's always been a little harried for all the obvious reasons because he had a fiance and all that other stuff.
But they admitted their love for each other and kissed.
Yeah, well. But she made a point to be like, let's not. He's like, should I call Starfleet HR and tell them that we're dating?
Yeah.
She was like,
Chapel doesn't like to get tied down.
Yeah, she's like, don't be doing that.
Spock wants to go steady and she wants to like be have fun.
He's the one that's being intense.
She's Dr. Feelgood.
She's.
No.
There's one interpretation. Another interpretation. is that she does not yet know what the structure of her life is going to be, and she doesn't want to be tied down, right? And we see another example with Kirk talking about like, I'm in this fucked up situation where I knocked up my girlfriend, and he doesn't for a moment say like, I'm not going to like move to Starbase One. He's like, fuck that, I'm going to do it. I'm going to like continue my career.
Starbase One.
So, yeah, I think she's doing the good thing here. She would have preferred to do it in private. And because she's singing it, it conveys to Spock. I think even though I do think he's overreacting a little bit and causes himself a little bit of unnecessary trauma.
Maybe he doesn't really understand singing then.
Well, I think he doesn't, he wants to talk to her, but he doesn't want to fucking talk to her.
Okay.
He doesn't want to hear what she's saying.
Okay, look.
You know what I'm saying? He does not want to hear what she's saying.
I understand they're taking some artistic freedom with expression on this, but it doesn't change the fact that he asked her what was going on and she just never answered him.
Oh, yeah.
She never responded to
that's
him.
That's right.
Well, he walked out, too, because he walked
because
out.
Because she was all fucking
she said
dancing.
Was, she said was,
yeah,
I'm
but
ready.
You gotta give, it's after you do a big musical number, you're going to give somebody a 5-minute break to catch their breath.
Yeah, but like answer the question.
Instead of like being like, so be like, so where are we, Christine? Are we together? She's like, I'm ready to go.
You could have like, used that music to answer the question.
You also keep saying she didn't answer the question. I think honestly, I'd argue that the line she says the very end, she says, if I need to leave you, I won't fight it. And that's a double edged because she's talking about the ship, she's talking about the crew, but she's also talking about Spock because what she's saying is, if you're going to have a problem with me leaving and doing this other stuff. Now, granted, there's no indication Spock would have had a problem with that, but
it's only going to be for like a few months. We know that she comes back to the Enterprise.
I guess we're just supposed to interpret it like she's saying, like, yeah, I'm not tied down. Don't make me make these decisions right now. We're taking some artistic freedom by not directly answering the question, but implying it through song and dance, I guess.
I think we also have to pull back slightly, and there is the meta reasoning, which I won't get into super spoilers about.
It's a TV show.
Even though no, it's not the TV show.
Just kidding.
No, but on TOS, we learn the name Roger Corby is not new to Star Trek.
That's right.
Corby.
Roger Corby.
Corby.
He's a xenoorthodontist.
Roger Corby becomes a very important person in Nurse Chapel's life based off of what we learn in Star Trek TOS.
Oh.
Long ago. This was
those
a character.
Those old scientists.
So they are setting this up. They are setting up this new conflict.
And who got set up?
You got set up.
And so they've got to put Chapel in a position where... You got to think of it this way, right? And I'm not going to try to, you know, argue the merits of who's right or who's wrong in any given situation. But Chapel had a sort of an infatuation and a flirtation with Spock.
It's an infatuation and that's a flirtation.
Really, isn't that really like a TAS?
When
it's a new sensation that's sweeping the nation. Infatuation.
Hey.
When
simmer down.
Remember that track?
Yes. Okay.
It's called Infatuation.
Yes, it's a good one. I'll have you play it again in a second. But she has this infatuation when he has a fiance, and then when he doesn't have a fiance, it's almost like, oh shit. It's like the dog that caught the car. It's kind of like you could argue that there's an aspect of that here where
the grass is always greener.
Yeah, that's we can just, you know, there's a number, a bird in the hand is worth two in the bush. Hey, Dan, you want to shout out any aphorisms?
The water's always saltier on the other side of the wave. That's actually not true.
Pretty much.
Okay, well, regardless. Anyway,
the water's saltier in the ocean,
this song moves Balls almost on. Immediately, very swiftly, we move into the next song, which
this
I think...
This news really changes everything.
I like the vocal fry, raspy voice.
I do like that jump there.
This news really changes everything.
I like that little, and Spock does that too, and I like that.
Well, I was going to say, in the next song, in I'm the X song, Jesse, you implied that you did not like this song.
This song is Spock being sad about Christine.
But for me, I really like this song because I like the I'm the X song because I think he...
I'm the X.
That was a weird one at the end.
I'm the X.
Yeah, because that's like the concluding phrase in the song. But he does that thing where he goes like extra deep on like just one syllable of like the words where he's like, breathe, you know.
Oh, wait, that's not the one.
Yeah.
I do like the dun 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 dun.
Oh yeah.
Does it just go on forever?
I just
that over and over.
Yeah, like, I just have that bass recorded. Yeah, that's why it's labeled
I like
bass.
It. Can you send that to me via email? I'm just gonna have my Google play that over and over.
My Google.
I'll go to
my
sleep. Google.
Yeah, I can send this to you.
I'll just get so tense while I'm going to sleep. It just gets more and more. Jesus.
I'm the X.
That was the beginning of that part.
Do you have an example of what I'm talking about though? Like at the beginning of the song.
Oh yeah, I do.
Convince myself we share the same feeling.
Yeah,
and that
he's got that baritone.
Yeah,
that's Spock motif.
And
like
I'm
his
wondering
because
he sings
Granddaddy Gregory.
He sings that twice, and the one I recorded was the second time. And the first one was really deep, but the second one, the one I played, was deeper. I'm wondering if they accented that with like some kind of brass instrument or something.
Everyone.
Like here's it. You think they accented this one with
play it again?
Burp.
So we're gonna see if they because the first one was definitely like low. This is the second one, but see if this one they like accent this with an instrument.
Convince myself we share the same feeling.
On the same, it sounds like there's like maybe a trombone or something.
There's definitely a feeling, you know, an accompaniment. Feeling.
But I think there's a note that hits like a bar the same time he hits that. Same.
Really?
I don't know.
Same
I could be
feeling,
wrong.
Same.
I would say that sort of threw out.
Myself, we share the same feeling.
I don't know. It's hard to tell because the first time he sings, it's really, you know, deep too. So.
I'm the X.
I'm the X. Anyway.
I'm the X.
I like this song though. I thought this was interesting because he had the whole, like, I thought Ethan Peck did a good job of clearly not a singer, but managing to pull off some stuff. I know that probably with some auto-tune or whatever, but still it worked.
Do you and think that digital vibrato is a thing? That's got to be a thing.
Why do you keep saying that? Why do you keep saying that word?
Why wouldn't it be?
That term. Yeah.
Because, like, when, you know, when they, like, auto-tune makes them on tune, but when they have the shakiness, the vibrato.
Of course they can do that. You can do anything.
I know you can do anything.
Why wouldn't it be a thing?
All you have to do is you take your audio file, you send it to Zombo.com.
And Zombo.
They can do anything.
You can do anything at Zombo.com.
I'm wondering if they did that in this, though.
MR does.
I do think they did that in this.
This news really changes everything.
That was the first one.
Yeah.
Everything.
That was the first one.
But. This song, love it or hate it as in a song form, it does a couple things that are awesome. I mean, just it encapsulates this. Mm-hmm. What they've done here is they've given us a reason why mm-hmm. Spock has turned away from his human side, which mm-hmm. he was trying to explore a little bit this season, and starts moving towards the much more Vulcan, logical Spock that we know in the future. This gives him a good social reason. It's a psychological defense mechanism from a bad relationship, basically.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He's decided, I don't fucking want to feel hurt, so I won't feel hurt if I don't have emotions.
If I feel Vulcan.
If I feel more
Except
Vulcan.
The Vulcans have big, crazy emotions.
Yeah,
emotions.
That's true.
Relax.
The other thing I liked was the lyrics are just sort of some of the lyrics are brilliant. I mean, are simple. Some of them are brilliant. And in this song, and the whole, like, I solve for,
I guess,
why.
It depends on your definition of brilliant.
Well, I mean, okay, maybe not brilliant, but at least fucking clever. Because the whole line, I solve for why in my computation, I'm the X.
Oh,
X
yeah.
and Y solving solving
that
X.
Made me,
y,
think, that made me think
y,
of
Data's WHY versus Y right. Y. X versus EX, X.
That part made me think of Data.
Variable versus spouse, ex-partner.
It made me think about Data's poem about Spock.
Yes.
You know.
Yes, Felis Catus is your taxonomic nomenclature. Quadrupedo
masturbator.
Carnivorous by nature.
Masturbator?
A carnivorous quadruped. No, something quadruped, carnivorous by nature. I used to know the whole thing. Not anymore. Okay, anyway.
I know the break for the ice baby.
All right, give us the break.
I'm not gonna do it. I don't have anything to prove to you.
Let's not do that.
That's what some kid told me. He said I can do a backflip. I was like, no, you can't. He's like, I don't have anything to prove
exactly.
to you. That kid went on to be a very well-adjusted person.
He was a fucking weird kid.
You should kick him in the balls.
Okay. Okay.
No comment.
But we can move along to Keep Us Connected. Which, as you noted earlier, Dan, was okay.
Oh, wait, something's going on.
No.
Wait, I think it's stuck.
No.
Wait, something's wrong with this. I think something. Oh, there we go.
Okay. You need to work on your poker face. Dan's like, I don't know. Something's just clearly wrong with it.
I don't know, guys.
I have no idea. I have no idea why this machine is doing this.
The record must have skipped.
I don't fall for
Maybe I got hacked.
Schemes.
Maybe it was hackers.
I think there was a scratch on the hard drive.
I think you're a sneak.
Ain't that the truth? Yes, Celia Rose Gooding is fucking amazing. Mm-hmm. And this was a very well performed song. It was very sweet. Okay, you're undercutting my argument a little bit.
I'm sorry.
No, I'm just saying it's good. Now, granted, yes, you can carve out chunks of the song and make it seem a little less. But I think in the context
that was a touching part. That was a good part. Though.
In the context
of the rest
show,
of the song,
she's talking about her, you know, her family, dead family, and all this other stuff, and talking about being alone. I like the whole solo, you know, the whole mm-hmm. you know, talking about, you know, I'm always solo.
Well, her character.
Oh yeah, right.
Her character's whole deal is like she's avoiding connecting with her mm-hmm. crewmates
mm-hmm. because they might die, like her family
died.
And yeah. solo, like she's singing a solo, but she's also so low.
So low they can't hear you.
Mm-hmm. Yes. But yeah, but it, yeah, she's talking about how she's she was connected to her family. She's not connected to people anymore, and it's like, you know, it's all ironic because she's a communications officer.
Well, and I think the other thing that is happening here is throughout the course of both seasons of Strange New Worlds, but particularly this season after the death of Hemmer, where she felt a little lost, and this is what she states it outright in this song, that Hemmer helped her kind of figure out who she was. Hemmer's belief in me changed my life. There you go. And there's been an absence since then.
An abscess?
No, no.
An absence?
An emotional abscess.
An emotional absence?
You're thinking of Daruk or whatever.
None of those things.
Or is that what it's called? Daruk?
Eric?
What was that Romulan?
Eric.
Wormwood?
Huh? Oh, yeah, you're talking about... Yeah, I remember. I mean, I don't remember specifically. Uzo? It wasn't Romulan, it was Orion. It was Orion.
Orion.
The Orion drinking in Those Old Scientists. But regardless...
Let's not worry about that.
Yes, you've distracted me from my point about this particular song, which is she's figuring out her value as a person to both the crew and to the universe. I think before the impression was she's like, okay, I'm talented. I can do these things. But now she's starting to understand more, I think, about how her, it's not just the talent. It's all the parts of her as a person, her initiative, her creativity, all these things come together because you can speak a million languages and be completely fucking useless to people if you don't have these other important character attributes. Right. And so I think it's simultaneously wrestling with her loneliness, but also part of that is related to her having a place in the universe. And I think she's starting to realize, oh, I like figuring things out. Like, this is my place in the universe, bringing people together. Precisely. Oh. You said it.
Yeah. Didn't get you stuck said that it, time.
Uhura.
Oh, it's Dalak, not Daruk. Dalak is the...
Dalak.
Dalak.
Orion Dalak.
All right. And then...
I like good thing we brought the Dalak.
They did that thing.
Yeah, there was like a flute.
I think we should move right along home. Move along home into... For some reason, you're making me feel like I'm getting I'm 10 years old getting a haircut at the mall.
Am I trying to make you sit still or something?
With my mom being all like, no, Martin. Oh,
yeah. Okay, we can move on.
I don't know. It's strange business. All right, next song, last song, really, basically, other than the credits, is We Are One. We Are One, which I'm sure there's 1,000 songs called We Are One.
Like, it showed, like, people all dancing.
Yes.
Like, in the corridors, like, crew members. Like, they weren't singing. Like, why were they dancing? Like, you can't dance through subspace. They were singing through subspace. It was a waste of energy.
Jesse's an old curmudgeon. It was silly, of course, getting everyone to dance and the choreography, but it was also fun. It was well done. And I'm somebody, I get that like tingly, the nerve tinglies. And there were a couple songs in this show, and this was one of them where I got the nerve tinglies. And partly when they did that whole camera rotate around where all the crew was disorganized and then the camera rotated around and then boom, they were all like in sync. It was a blatant manipulation of my emotions and it fucking worked.
Yeah.
It worked.
Totally.
Yeah. This series when it was like, yeah.
I look around and everyone I see the pinnacle of guts and resiliency.
I was all like bopping my head to that.
Oh yeah. They definitely were.
It takes my new mental strength and trust.
Yeah.
Oh, and this part, speaking of killer bass, it's a little hard to hear in this
speaking
in the song.
Of killer bass.
It's a little bit hard to see. They need to pump the bass.
Speaking of some gnarly waves.
They need to pump the bass part here, but listen to this. This isn't killer bass.
We got lost and disconnected, distracted, undefended.
Yeah,
it's all,
that's when you see them like they're singing like in like different groups.
Yeah,
and, like they're all like yeah. That,
yeah.
Yeah, they were totally rocking. Yeah.
Bass was rocking.
Yeah.
I love when basses are like,
I dig that too.
Yeah.
I dug the Spock adding in the, you know, they're all like, I'll miss singing. And then Spock was all like, I won't miss singing.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
cute,
Spock.
Clever.
Paleo misses singing. I think someone else missed singing, but Spock said he didn't miss singing.
Yeah, I think was it Uhura or Lon?
But they might have been at the end. Lon, like, I think Uhura's all like humming and they're like, don't fucking sing.
Yeah, they're all freaking out.
Everybody's like looking at her like, no.
Yep. They freak out.
It's Paley on Lon Wilmes singing. That's,
and
that's
of course, the big thing here, and this is another thing that's tearing the internet apart.
I bet I probably know what you're going to say.
Do you want to play a clip?
Why have you...
Why you only calling us when you got your dramas?
When you got your dramas?
Gonna draw your last breath at the end of my class.
Mechleth. I think it says "Make your heart bleed." I think
Klingon, Klingon pop, K-pop.
Yeah,
Klingon K-pop, Klingon pop.
And then earlier in this episode,
the last thing anyone wants is singing Klingons.
Yeah,
yeah. So they did it.
I love this, and
it was hilarious. It was too might have been a little cheesy and over the top, but I thought it was so funny that I didn't care.
And while watching it, I was like, okay, I know there are going to be people who will hate this, and I can't get mad at them. If they're this is so stupid.
Yeah, I know.
But it was, to me, I laughed I laughed out loud.
This is General Garkog.
And by the way,
Garkog.
General Garkog is the best name for a Klingon ever, because it's like a meta humor. It's like, what should we name this Klingon? It's like, name him Garkog.
Yeah. That was Hemmer who played that guy?
Yes. Sounded like it was Bruce Horak, who plays... Blaze Hammer.
On another port at the beginning, near the beginning, the Klingons are like, "We have located the abominable source of our dishonor and we'll destroy it." But I mean, Klingons are emotional, man. You know?
I could see them if they're enduring this business, that they would feel kind of pissed off. Because there were some people who were saying, like, "Oh, I was hoping we'd see Klingons doing Klingon opera," but that's not as fun. First of all, it's like, yeah, but it's almost playing to type. It wouldn't be that interesting.
Yeah.
And plus, they wouldn't get so angry about singing Klingon opera. They might be upset, but they wouldn't be enraged to the point of wanting to blow something up.
They're gonna find
they
want
to blow something up because they think they look like assholes dancing around like that.
So the deal with this song is the improbability field, it triggers the singing, but if too many people sing with enough emotion, it breaks it. That's what I gathered from this.
I was guessing they were saying, like, you have to do something so improbable that it collapses the universe or something.
Yeah, you have to hit 344 gigawatts or
gigawatts.
Something.
Yeah. 1.21 gigawatts.
Yeah.
Jagawaggles.
All right, so that pretty much does it for the songs. There is, of course, the medley at the end. It's not that long.
I have to give credit when due.
I
got a bunch of these. So.
Yeah, the Kirk business.
The Starship Enterprise feels electrified.
Electrified.
Oh, sorry, played that one.
The Enterprise.
Do you have any from that last little bit, that last little medley they did? Because it was cute. First of all, they did, we should mention, they played the original Alexander Courage arrangement. Yeah.
Oh, you mean the credits?
Like the
credits. Yeah, but then that was before the credits. And then at the credits, they had a medley of songs from this episode.
Oh, I missed
instrumental
that.
Songs.
I totally missed that.
Oh, it's worth checking out because they do it in a kind of a 60s slinky jazzy style with sort of Herb Alpert instruments and stuff.
Interesting.
It's unfortunately not
ashamed of myself for not thinking.
Well, because the credits are only like a minute long, you know, so like they kind of zoom by quick, but it was the kind of thing where I was like, oh man, I'd like a full sort of 6-minute medley of all these songs in that style. That'd be fantastic. Who knows, they're gonna put out an album, of course.
Yeah,
they've already put some of the if
is
not
gonna
all
hit
these
Broadway
that I don't know.
This is where it all leads, the Enterprise.
Yeah,
this is
so funny.
this is the big closer. This is pretty hype. Hype, is that what people say?
No.
Yes.
No, nobody said that.
I like that.
The stars. It was like literally falling stars.
I like there's a little computer noise in between the blow up and them singing. There's this little computer going bloop bloop.
Oh, they do a great. So the other thing is, remember when they try to their original plan halfway through the episode, when they try to zap the thing using the deflector dish?
Oh, yeah.
If you listen closely, the deflector dish is not making like a space laser sound. It just sounds like a bunch of fucking brass horns going like brrr. I was like, oh, that's great.
They brought up the Heisenberg compensator.
Of course they did.
In this episode.
Why wouldn't they?
I don't know.
Why wouldn't they?
They did, though.
And they did.
They did. And that's something that happened. Oh, Louis Pasteur of Archaeological Medicine.
Yeah.
Patrick was looking at my computer screen earlier. And do you remember it was
I was not looking at your computer screen. I was taking pictures of your setup, and then you freaked out saying, like, nobody can see my notes.
Yeah, but I thought you were laughing at the fact that
because then you minimized your notes and it was a picture of Louis Pasteur.
Yeah.
I thought it was going to be some porn.
I looked him up because I didn't know anything about Louis Pasteur.
Yeah.
Because I'm an ignorant asshole, apparently.
Well, no, I mean, you know, and the term, the Louis Pasteur of archaeological medicine, I think that comes from either TOS or TAS, I forget. It was mentioned before.
Have to give credit when due.
I look around and everyone I see, the pinnacle of guts and resiliency.
I don't know why, that was like one of my favorite breaks when they cut to that part. It's like when the drum set kicks in like that.
And I liked it too, and I think that...
And of course the killer bass part after that.
So. Anyone who's only seen this episode once, whether you liked it or didn't like it, please go watch it like three or four more times, because you will get something more out of it. I mean, if you're really going to hate musicals, okay, don't bother about it. But I don't know, I thought this was... It worked out pretty well in the end, I think.
Yeah. I was trying to turn
electrified.
I was trying to turn it down so you could talk, but I realized it's probably really distracting. Actually.
No, it's fine.
Starship Enterprise feels electrified.
I like that part.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. All right. What's also good is ending this episode, so we can get ready for next week's episode, which will be our 200th special-tacular. And on that 200th special-tacular, we're gonna have so much fun. Also next week, of course, episode 201, that will have our coverage of the season finale of Star Trek Strange New Worlds Season 2.
Jeez, we've gone through so many episodes.
Hegemony.
So many episodes.
I know, it's great. And we're going to do another 700 or 800 of these.
Hoping to bunnies.
I doubt we will be bunnies.
And then we'll get bored of it all. But yeah, so that's what you can look forward to next week. In the meantime, of course, social media at It's Got Star Trek. It's Got Star Trek.com, YouTube, Facebook, all that business. You can find us out there. Until then, hope you all are having fun, whatever you're doing, wherever you're at, singing some tunes, or just listening to some tunes, whatever you're into, that's all good. We will talk to you on our next episode, the 200th.
I do not sing. I would prefer not to be a bunny either.
The 200th episode, special tacky. We'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
Why you only calling us when you got your dramas? One of these days we'll repay you, we'll slay you. Gonna draw your last breath at the end of Armageddon. Your eternal torture is every Klingon dream.